I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know.
James fires a three. That's good. LeBron James from way downtown. And they've tied
the Golden State Warriors took game one of the NBA Finals, but Cleveland Cavalier LeBron James once again established that he's very good at basketball. He scored 51 points, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by the Ringer's Claire McNear and the Boston Globe's Nora Princiotti. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Thank you, Bill. Hello.
Nora, your turn to go first.
So, I want to talk about LeBron for a second. As you mentioned, dropped 51 points in game one of the finals. First time that's happened in a finals game where the team that has the player doing that has lost. So I was in Cleveland for a while during the Eastern Conference Finals because of the Celtics. And in a very lowly football writer parachuting in, not knowing the team for a week kind of way, my major takeaway from that is that the Cavs have the weirdest vibe. You know, it's really hard to play with a superstar because inevitably, as we saw with J.R. Smith making that blunder, not understanding what the score was at the end of the game in game one, the other Cavaliers, whether it's being mocked on Saturday Night Live or just never being able to live up to LeBron's caliber of play, they shoulder the blame in a loss, perhaps deservedly so. It's hard to be a general manager when you have a superstar on a series of one-year contracts. And it's even hard to be an owner being asked to spend all this money and not knowing if your guy is going to stay or if he's going to go. I mean, I think a lot of people think that this is, again, LeBron's last year in Cleveland. And I just think that's fascinating because, you know, you wouldn't think of that as a bad thing. And of course it isn't. They're in their fourth straight finals.
You mean having the greatest player in basketball is a bad thing? Yes.
Right. You should be jumping for joy, right? But then you start to think about it. What if you are J.R. Smith? Nothing you do is really ever going to be good enough.
Claire, do you buy this other side to the coin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I cannot speak for Cleveland fans, but I get the sense that they are grateful for him, but it is sort of this weird place to be in. And it's a strange thing where with LeBron, you know, his just being on a team generally has the aura of that team immediately being kind of an automatic contender, and it didn't feel like that this year. Of course, the Cavaliers are now in the finals and just about took game one from the Warriors this week, but it is a very strange dynamic. I think maybe it is both exacerbated and eased by the sense that I think everybody has kind of felt like this is his last year in Cleveland. And if it hasn't been an explicit swan song, it's kind of felt that way. So, yeah, it's a strange time.
He came back to Cleveland. He gave them that one championship.
Right.
And so maybe now they're thinking, well, we don't want to get too excited because he's probably going to go somewhere else. And yet they're in the finals and maybe we should get excited. And it's like they don't quite know what to do.
There's this weird sort of apathy among the fans. The first thing I noticed was that they were all talking about the Browns, the 0-16
and
Browns.
And weeping openly?
No. The 0-16 Browns were genuinely the talk of the town when I got there during the Eastern Conference Finals. And what people said when I asked them sort of incredulously, you know, they were 0-16 and you have arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, right? Why? Talk about him. Care about him. The answer a lot of the time was, yeah, but the Browns, ironically, since they left Cleveland at one point, they're not going anywhere.
Claire, you have also recently returned from a sporting event. Explain, please.
I sure have. This week was the most important sporting event of all here in Washington, D.C. Not the Stanley Cup, but the National Spelling Bee was this week here in D.C. You know, we now have a new spelling champion. It's 14-year-old Kartik Namani from McKinney, Texas. This was also the 25th year that ESPN has aired the National Spelling Bee Finals live. The Bee was in prime time this year, as it is most years. And while it was up against Game 1 of the NBA Finals this year, the Spelling Bee usually gets somewhere north of 1 million viewers, which is pretty amazing. So my argument is that the National Spelling Bee isn't just a sporting event. It is the best sporting event. And my rationale for that is, you know, I talked a little bit to Kartik's dad after he won, and he was telling me that his son trains something like 4 to 6 hours a day, every day, even on school days. It's 1 hour in the morning before school. He comes home, he does his homework, and then it's however many hours after that. And as a viewer of the Bee, you get to enjoy the event unvarnished, not like with most sports. You know, most of the kids are newcomers in the most literal sense possible. They are new to the stage. They are new to the world. And you can cheer for anyone, and you'll be happy for whoever wins. And it's just as breathtaking, I would say, as the NBA. You know, it's similarly prodigious talents not available to mere mortals.
You know, I do think that that sort of raw emotion of these kids, it is sports, right? I mean, now I will say I watched the NBA Finals. I have to admit that that was the game that I chose to partake in as a viewer. But here's what I'm curious about. When you say that he trains, is that studying etymology? Is that rapid fire quizzing? Spell this word, spell that word? Because that's fascinating to me.
I think it's a little bit of all those things. I mean, it's standing in front of a whiteboard and writing down the words. It's, you know, going, oh, he has a trainer. He's got a woman who comes and helps him prep for this every single day, and his parents help him. And so, yeah, it's studying the etymology. I mean, the first thing these kids ask when they hear a word is, what language is that derived from? And you've got to think at this point, most of the kids on stage who averaged like 11 years old know, you know, awesome. Basic Greek, basic Latin, basic German. It's truly outstanding.
I have nightmares about spelling still because I've always been very bad at it. And in fact, I can still remember teachers writing notes to my parents saying, Billy had a fine year, but we can't teach him to spell.
Well, this radio thing makes a little more sense now.
Where were those trainers? Back in the late 50s when I needed them.
You know, I wonder if there's been any, it seems like they're spelling it at just as high a caliber as ever, which is interesting because this is something that my dad always gripes about. He always says, kids aren't going to be able to know how to spell anymore because of all the autocorrect and spell check.
Absolutely. And, you know, most of these words are so obscure that they don't even show up in spell check.
So. Totally.
Claire, I just want to ask you one question to close off this topic. Are you willing to deal with all of the emails and tweets that say this show is nuts to contend that the spelling bee is the very
Happily.
Best sporting event of all?
I would be proud.
I will send them your way. Today, I'm saluting Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. He's an offensive guard for the Kansas City Chiefs who graduated from medical school on Tuesday. This guy is not one of those rare players who goes back to school and gets an advanced degree once his career in the NFL is over. He got through medical school at McGill University while still playing in the NFL. And now he says he wants the back of his jersey to read either Dr. Duvernay-Tardif or Duvernay-Tardif, MD. And if the NFL doesn't go along with this, the league's even crazier than I think it is. So what do you think? Does the commissioner of the No Fun League bend on this one, Nora?
Oh, they have to. I'll be so disappointed if they don't. I mean, various suffixes are fine. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't let him do it. And I would go one step further. I hope when he tapes the introductions for the primetime games, please, I want to be hearing Dr. Duvernay-Tardif, MD. I hope he goes just as
both.
Long.
Both
yes,
doctor and
both.
MD.
As,
oh,
as
wow.
drawn out as he can do it.
It's a far cry from He Hate Me, but you know, I'd still want to see it. Claire, what do you think? Does the NFL go along with this idea for the doc?
You know, I was originally inclined to say no, to be totally honest. I think that, you know, junior and senior are different. They are, you know, more explicitly part of the name and not a title. But I've kind of changed my mind in that the NFL and the Players Association have really been making a concerted effort to sort of facilitate players building other careers for when their playing days are through. And I think that, you know, if you can get a medical degree or a PhD before or while you're playing, I mean, heck, we should all celebrate that, especially the NFL.
I hope they do. I really do. And I will be watching the news to see if it happens. Since nobody else has mentioned it, I also do wonder how somebody who has an MD can think it's a good idea to keep playing pro football given what we know about CTE. But that is the doctor's call. It's his head. And good on him and good luck, right?
Sure.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Ringer's Claire McNear and The Boston Globe's Nora Princiotti. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.